Resources for Monday, April 30th, 2007, and open a public hearing on House Bill 5022, the Department of Environmental Quality Budget Bill, and House Bill 5023, the Department of Environmental Quality Fee Ratification Bill. Ms. Halleck, do you want to come forward and bring, I believe we're switching to, water quality.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Stephanie Halleck. I'm the director of the Department of Environmental Quality, and with me is Lisa Pearson from the Department of Administrative Services and Lori Onan, who is the administrator of the Water Quality Program. I did provide you two handouts in response to questions that were asked last week. One is a handout describing the requirements for the sustainability plan the department is working on. The other was requested by Representative Gerard, which is a graphic showing the amount of funding that EPA has been providing to states and the amount of regulations that have been going up while that funding has been going down. And I'd be happy to answer any questions with, or we'll just start with Lori Onan.
Yeah, there was a question.
No, I just wanted to thank the director.
Welcome.
Okay, we can go ahead and get started.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Devlin and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lori Onan, administrator of DEQ's Water Quality Division. DEQ carries out the Federal Clean Water Act in Oregon under Environmental Protection Agency oversight, and we also carry out state-only programs, including the Groundwater Management Act and Septic System Regulation. Water quality is an exciting field to be in because Oregonians care deeply about it. In almost every poll taken on environmental issues, clean water concerns are at the top or near the top. And as you know, Oregon's been a leader for water quality since citizens passed an initiative to clean up the Willamette River, which happened well before there was a Federal Clean Water Act. I wanted to point out a couple of areas where we are particularly successful. Our TMDL program, which is known as Total Maximum Daily Loads, or Clean Water Plans, has been recognized as one of the best in the country. Also, our monitoring program is consistently looked to from folks in other states and across the nation as a leader in innovative monitoring and tracking trends in clean water improvements and programs. I want to point this out because it's a credit to our staff that we've done this work and many other important successes with, I think, over time, a severely underfunded program, which I'll get into more as we go through the handouts. So turning to tab D in the binder, if you have it there, page 1, you've got a couple of pie charts. And these pie charts are an overview of funding for the water quality operating budget. The pie chart on the right shows the total budget recommended by the governor, which is about $56 million, as compared to the pie chart on the, on the left, which shows about $47 million of funding in 05-07. These numbers do not include the state revolving fund, which provides low-interest loans to upgrade sewage treatment plants. This operating budget supports about 12 different water quality program areas and the day-to-day work that happens in those different program areas. As the yellow slices on the pie chart show, the amount of federal funds in our budget has declined by about $1.65 million from 05-07, which is one of the reasons we're asking for more general funds. And if there's no questions on that page, turning to the next page, tab page 2.
Lori?
Yes.
I do have a question, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
The decline in federal funds, is what program specifically is that connected with Safe Drinking Water Act, with Clean Water Act? Can you maybe expand on that, or is it with the revolving fund?
Chair Devlin, Representative Dingfelder, it's actually everything. We get grants. Our base funding is under the Clean Water Act, is Section 106 grants. Those have been declining since 2003. Section 319 funds, which are non-point source grants, have also been declining. Clean Water State Revolving Fund also has been declining. And then we get some specialized grants for TMDLs and monitoring, and those things have also been declining. So I think you've just seen a kind of erosion over time in most of the sources of funding since 2003, as well as the fact that those federal funds generally don't keep up with cost increases.
Thank you.
And if I could just make one clarification, the Safe Drinking Water Act program is at the Health Division under Gail Shibley, so we actually don't administer the drinking water program.
So you don't get any funds at all for your groundwater protection program, no, out of that?
Chair Devlin, Representative Dingfelder, we do get some funding at the Safe Drinking Water Act for the Underground Injection Control Program. It's $100,000 a year, which is not enough to run the program. And then we do get some funding passed through DHS to us for our role in the Safe Drinking Water Act. So.
Please proceed.
Turning to page 2, we have a bar chart that shows water quality FTE over time. It shows the trend in water quality staffing. Between 0103 and 0507, staffing was reduced by 34 FTE. And that meant losing positions in monitoring, TMDLs, permits, water quality standards development, groundwater protection, non-point source pollution control, administrative support, education and outreach, and information systems. The two bar charts on the right of page 2 show that the governor's budget adds a net of 37 FTE for a total of 238, and the co-chair's budget adds a net of 31 FTE for a total of 232. When I turn to the policy package, I will talk about the effects of the co-chair reductions. I want to emphasize here that even under the governor's budget, we will not be able to do everything that the public and regulated community want us to do. As Stephanie mentioned in her opening remarks, because of general fund cuts over time, the groundwater protection resources have been almost completely eradicated. And I think we discussed last week, the governor's recommended budget does not include about $1 million in general funds to fulfill federally delegated responsibility to set water quality standards. That would have been new funding and new positions to do work required by the Clean Water Act that we haven't been able to do for some time. And without additional funding, we'll be making it clear to EPA and stakeholders that we can't fulfill federal requirements for setting water quality standards.
Let me just clarify one thing. Although the co-chair's budget is a reduction from the governor's, they're both substantial increases from the legislative we approved for the 2005 biennium.
Chair Devlin, that's correct, and I actually greatly appreciate that. I think I just wanted to put on the record the things that we still have issues with. Before I move to the policy package, a few words about House Bill 5023. House Bill 5023 ratifies wastewater permit fees adopted by the Environmental Quality Commission in 2006. The fees ratified by the bill reflect an 11% increase in fee revenue for the wastewater permit program. This increase was approved by the 2005 legislature as part one of a two-part increase recommended by a stakeholder advisory committee. This advisory committee is known as the Blue Ribbon Committee, and they have supported both fee and general fund increases for both 05 and then 07 as well. They also recommended that the ongoing permit program funding be made up of 60% fees and 40% general funds and federal funds. And this is an issue that I'll be talking more when we get to some of our other policy package, just to explain why that's something to be aware of. We have found some minor errors in House Bill 5023 that will require amendments, and we've provided this information to Paul Siebert. If there aren't any further questions, I'll move to the policy packages, which start on page 3. The first key budget driver is the goal of efficient and effective water quality permits. We issue permits to limit pollution from discharges to rivers, lakes, and groundwater. Funding for our permit programs has historically not kept pace with increasing workload, and that's driven by growth and development, increasing stringency and complexity of regulations, a high level of public scrutiny, and mounting legal challenges and appeals. Starting with Package 120, this is the part two of the two-part funding increase I just mentioned. The wastewater permit program issues permits to industrial facilities, municipal sewage treatment plants, and some commercial and development activities. It does not include the septic system program. This package includes general funds and a 5% increase in wastewater permit fee revenue. These resources will allow us to hire new staff to help permit writers with complex issues, including toxicity testing. This added help for solving permit issues will help permits be more timely and current and help us meet key performance measures 3 and 4. This package also adds enforcement resources to respond to permit violations and includes limitation for federal funds for software to allow facilities to submit permit compliance reports electronically. This will streamline paperwork for businesses and municipalities and be more efficient for DEQ. Moving to Package 122, Stormwater Control. This package is important for clean water and also for efficient and timely stormwater permitting. Stormwater is rainwater that runs off land carrying pollution, including sediments, pesticides, fertilizers, and oil and gas from roads, among other things. Federal law requires us to issue and enforce permits to control stormwater from construction activities and municipal and industrial facilities. This program is one that is more recent under the Clean Water Act, and it's really being driven across the country and in Oregon and Washington, particularly by third-party litigation. We have a number of lawsuits that we're constantly dealing with in this program. And in response to a recent court ruling, the Environmental Quality Commission last year adopted new rules requiring a new public comment process for most of our stormwater permits. This is an added workload that we had not anticipated, and we're not staffed to handle it. We have about 9 staff statewide who manage about 3,000 stormwater permits. And I just want to put out a number in contrast. The state of Washington, which manages about the same number of permits, 3,000, has 50 staff. I'm not saying we need...
Yes.
Explain who, when you say third-party litigation, who's instigating the lawsuits?
Mr. Chair, Senator Avakian, at this point, the litigation that we've seen comes from several environmental organizations who... I think are wanting to use Clean Water Act lawsuits to shape the future of the regulation in terms of what should be covered, what should be regulated, how it should be regulated. And I point out the difference in staffing between ecology and DEQ, not to say that we should have 50 staff, but to say that we are woefully understaffed to deal with the challenges. If the funding is provided in Package 122, we're going to focus on developing and maintaining a consistent and coordinated program. We're going to address policy and streamlining issues that we can't address now. We're going to actually do site inspections, which we can't do now. Right now, we can only respond to complaints and only prioritize the high-level complaints and be more timely in compliance actions. This is one of the packages that the co-chair's budget reduced. Reduce general funds by about $500,000. If this budget is adopted, there is a lot of work we'll still be able to do, but we will have to reduce the planned level of inspections, engineering reviews, complaint response, and enforcement. Particularly in western Oregon, which gets so much rainfall, we've seen serious pollution problems caused by erosion, sometimes slope failures from construction projects that we didn't have the resources to review or inspect. So I am concerned about reduced resources for this work. And here's where I wanted to bring back again the 60%, 40% fee funding agreement that came out of the Blue Ribbon Committee. Package 122 in the governor's budget is funded 60% by a fee increase and 40% by general funds, and that's based on the Blue Ribbon funding agreement. The co-chair's budget cuts only the general funds, so it's certainly a question. I don't know whether that's something you'll deliberate, but that would mean that if we were going to keep the 60-40 split of funding, that fees would need to be reduced to meet that 60-40 split.
A clarification on that on 122. Obviously, the numbers that are in the budget would not be a 60-40 split, not the co-chairs. Are you talking about the portion that's dedicated to the actual performance of the...
Senator Devlin, that's a very good catch. What we have in Package 122 is two things. We have some positions that are limited duration that last only for 07-09 biennium, and they are put on there to get through the public comment push for industrial stormwater permits, which starts this year. We'd have to renew 800 permits over a short period of time, and we need somebody to help us with that. After this biennium, they would go away. And then the permanent positions are funded 60% fees, 40% general funds.
Yes.
On the stormwater, what did we just pass on? Was that the stormwater thing out of the full ways and means? 2281, that was the
underground injection.
That's okay. Not part of the stormwater.
2118.
That's not the very bottom.
Okay. Yeah.
If I just read a little more.
Okay.
Just trying to stay on par.
Okay.
If there are no questions, further questions, I can move on to the next package.
Yes.
Package 125 is our septic system program. We permit and inspect septic systems to protect public health and groundwater from untreated sewage. We administer this program directly in 13 counties, and 23 counties administer the work under contracts with DEQ. We provide technical assistance and oversight to these counties in interpreting and applying the rules with a goal of consistency statewide. Currently, a surcharge fee of $40 is collected by DEQ and by the counties on all types of septic system permits issued to homeowners, developers, and septic system installers. The fees are intended to help cover the administrative and oversight costs of DEQ's statewide program, including audits of contract counties, rulemaking, training, and technical assistance. For the past several years, the surcharge fee revenue has not been enough for DEQ to conduct audits or provide the requested level of guidance to the counties. This package would increase the surcharge fee by $20, from $40 to $60, allowing DEQ to conduct audits and provide counties with more guidance and training. Okay. And if there are no questions on that one, moving to package 127. This is water quality 401 removal fill certification. Under section 401 of the Federal Clean Water Act, any federally permitted activity that discharges pollution to waters must receive a state water quality certification. Typically, our certifications are for removal and fill permits issued by the Army Corps of Engineers. Examples include filling wetlands for developments, dredging rivers, and bridge projects. We issue about 150 certifications per year, and in this biennium, we've done this work with less than two staff for the entire state. Many of the projects are complex and controversial, such as dredging on the Columbia River, and our existing staff is just inadequate to do this work. Package 127 restores part of an FTE that we cannot afford under the current fees and adds one FTE for a total of three in the program. With this additional staffing, our goal will be to issue our 401 certifications closer to the time that the Corps issues its permits, so applicants don't have to wait for our permit after they get the Corps permit. We can't always do this now.
Yes, Representative Warren.
Lori, how much do you work with state lands in this area?
Senator Devlin, Representative Garrard, we work very closely with them. You might have heard of a streamlining project that was done in the interim with DSL and Department of Consumer and Business Services and a number of different agencies. There was a report that came out of that work on how all the different state agencies that have a hand in removal fill, which there are a number of them, can do more to combine their processes to be more close in time and to be more consistent with each other. There's a pilot project that we're planning to do contingent on funding both for DSL and for DEQ. And we're part of a memorandum of agreement to that pilot project. So we work really closely with them as well as a number of different agencies.
Yeah. And what effect does this have financially on your department? Does it help or does it hurt?
Senator Devlin, Representative Garrard, which I'm not sure of your question.
This package. These partnerships that you have with state lands, financially, what is their effect on your agency?
Senator Devlin, Representative Garrard, under the current funding that we have now, which is less than two people for the whole state, it's a strain for us to be participating in the streamlining process. We think it has a benefit and it will help everybody have a better process, but in addition to participating in that and trying to keep up with all of the certifications, it's very much a strain, which is why we really need this package. If there's no further questions, I'll proceed to the next package.
Okay. Please proceed.
Package 160 is underground injection control, which you just mentioned was passed by the full Ways and Means Committee last Friday. So you've already talked about this as a subcommittee, and I'll just do a little bit of refreshing here. This program is required by the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act. It's intended to protect groundwater that is discharged by regulating wastewater, including stormwater that's discharged underground. The other permits I've mentioned today, including wastewater permits and stormwater permits, regulate discharge to surface waters. The sole source of funding for this work is a federal grant that supports less than one FTE. Package 160 restores part of our existing one FTE that we can't afford because the federal grant does not keep pace with cost increases, and it adds 5.5 new staff. And as you've already mentioned, this package relies on adoption of House Bill 2118, which did pass full Ways and Means last week. So I can move on if there's no... Okay, turning to page 4, key budget driver number 2 is to evaluate and improve watershed health. Page 4 shows 6 packages. All of these are included in the governor's budget and included in the co-chair's budget. starting right at the top of Package 50. This is a fund shift of federal Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Funds to general funds. Both the governor's budget and co-chair's budget shift funding for DEQ's Oregon plan monitoring from federal funds to general funds due to the decline in federal funds. Our monitoring assessment work for the Oregon Plan for Salmon Watersheds provides information needed to document existing water quality conditions critical to salmon survival and recovery efforts and track changes in water quality. And I'm intending to move through these pretty fast, so if there's no questions, I'll move on to the next one. Package 128 will restore existing water quality monitoring and TMDL positions that we can't afford due to decreases in federal funds. If we get this package, it will hold steady the current level of monitoring and types of pollution that we monitor, and it will continue an existing TMDL position that works with communities on the ground to develop, implement, and monitor the effectiveness of TMDL clean water action plans. Okay. Package 123 is drinking water protection. Oregon has more than 3,600 public drinking water systems that serve 3 million people. The Federal Safe Drinking Water Act requires states to map drinking water areas for public water systems and identify potential sources of contamination. Package 123 requests approval for federal funds passed through to DEQ by the Department of Human Services to continue three existing staff that we have now and add 2.5 FTE to enhance our work with other state agencies and local communities to protect drinking water from contamination. Package 126. Package 126 continues federal funds for one existing position to monitor the levels of bacteria at Oregon's beaches. This work is required by the Federal Beach Act, and if Oregon does not carry out this work, EPA would do it for us. DEQ monitors for bacteria, and we work closely with the Department of Human Services, which notifies local communities and posts public notices when bacteria is found to exceed safe levels for people.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Excuse me. In an era where you were so strained with staff, what would be, and I'm assuming that someone from your staff would have to take care of 126, what's the effect if you let the feds come in and do it instead of adding something else to your existing staff?
Senator Devlin, Representative Garrard, we actually had that debate internally about whether we should take this funding, and because it's true the EPA would do it if we didn't. I think the reason that we chose to do this ourselves is that we feel and we've found over time that we work, because it's requiring partnerships with other state agencies, it works better if we're doing that work and coordinating with Department of Human Services and the local communities rather than EPA doing that, because I think it's more efficient and effective if we're in that role.
Clarification, in a sense, because we've had this discussion in a number of different areas about whether or not some particular function should be given back to the EPA. And I can understand it in this particular case, and understanding your explanation in terms of, I can just imagine the EPA taking an area like this and then trying to coordinate it with all the people you're trying to coordinate it with and bringing a new person, basically, in our cup. It would be very difficult, but to what extent can you partially give a function back to the EPA when so many of your functions are interrelated?
Senator Devlin, that's a really good question. It's a real struggle whenever you get to that. We did draw the fine line with the Underground Injection Control Program because that was one where we had so little staff, one person trying to do it statewide, and it was kind of a self-contained program that it was really clear that we could turn that one back, and it probably the effect would be fairly limited on us. The effect on the regulated community, that's another question. I think after this session, depending on how the budget turns out, and particularly around the standards funding, it's going to be an important conversation to say, what does this mean to us, and how are we going to implement, knowing that we don't have enough to get it done. We've certainly talked to EPA about, are there ways they could take on parts of the work that would make sense? So those are the kind of conversations we have to have.
I'd just like to add one thing, that I think depending on what comes out of this session, some of the aforementioned environmental groups are continuing to have the conversation among themselves about whether they're going to petition EPA to take back the water program from us because we can't adequately do it.
Anything else? Please proceed.
Packages 181 and 191 continue the state revolving fund, which provides low interest loans to upgrade sewage treatment plants. Since 1990, this fund has provided more than $630 million in loans for more than 200 clean water projects. This is critically important, particularly to small communities. Adequate sewage treatment systems are important not just to clean water, but to businesses and ability to handle growth. Package 181 requests limitation for $16 million of additional revolving fund loans using the federal grants and also seeks limitation for bond issuance costs. Package 191 requests $4.8 million of limitation for debt service for general obligation bond. These provide the required state match for federal grants that maintain the fund. The debt service for this bond sale comes entirely out of the revolving fund. No general funds are required. We expect this to provide funding for about eight projects in 07-09. I wanted to say a few words about the future of this program, just so you're aware of the conversations that are happening with EPA. First of all, there's the size of the demand for infrastructure funding. We have a waiting list of communities that want to apply for funding, and we never have enough funding for this, so that's something that's an ongoing concern. Also, while this is a self-financed fund now, it used to be funded, the debt service used to be funded by general funds before the 0103 budget reduction started. By having it self-financing, this reduces the amount of funding available to give out as loans. And although EPA has approved self-financing in Oregon and some other states, it's recently raised concerns about this in terms of that eating into future loan capacity and may restrict the use of this in the future, which would mean we'd have to come back to this body with some other proposal for how to continue to pay debt service on these bonds. So I wanted to make you aware of that. And finally, federal capitalization grants have declined in the past few years. Fiscal year 07, it's $12 million. Previous year, it was $15 million. And certainly, we've heard from some in the federal government that they don't want this program to continue in the future as far as federally funding it. And so federal funding is no longer a guarantee that we can assume. So we're going to be thinking about this in the interim in terms of what we might want to bring back, because it's critical infrastructure funding for the state. And if there's no further questions on this page, I have one more. Page 5. Key budget driver number 3, protecting people's health and the environment from toxic chemicals. This is one of DEQ's strategic priorities. Toxic water quality pollution is an emerging issue and one that has certainly caught public attention. Toxics come from a broad range of sources, including legacy contamination from past practices, stormwater runoff that can carry pesticides and other chemicals, air pollution from Oregon and around the world, and discharges from industrial and municipal facilities. This policy package was created because Oregon has not invested in a toxics monitoring program for water. I think as you heard when Greg Pettit, our lab administrator, talked about key performance measure number 10, we have an ambient monitoring network that does not include toxics. In looking at how to get a control on what's happening with toxic pollution, because there are so many sources of it, it's important to design control and reduction strategies that address the toxics that are of highest concern and are targeted to get results. And this is going to require quality data. We don't have resources right now to systematically toxics of most concern, determine where they're coming from, or target resources toward solution. So this package establishes a water quality toxics program for Oregon. It's not a Cadillac program. It's a modest start. The $1.8 million in general funds would phase in 10 positions over the 07-09 biennium, starting with staffing needed to provide infrastructure and planning for a new program, and adding monitoring staff in the second year of the biennium. In establishing this program, we'll coordinate with state, federal, local agencies, tribal governments, the regulated community, environmental community, and others. so that we can leverage existing information and avoid duplication of resources. Once the program is established, which we expect to take about 1 year, we would start actual monitoring work. We intend to rotate monitoring around the state over time, starting in the Willamette River. I wanted to point out that there are thousands of chemicals out there, again, both legacy and current use chemicals, from many sources, and one of the emerging issues that we're hearing about now nationwide is pharmaceutical chemicals. So we will not be able to monitor for everything that people might want us to do, or even most of the chemicals that are out there. This package intends to focus on chemicals likely to be present at levels that are the greatest threat to people's health and threatened or endangered fish. That's how we would prioritize the work.
For the sake of committee consideration, you know that the co-chairs have reduced this package to $1 million.
To what?
$1 million. Can you differentiate between what you could do at the 1.8 and the $1 million?
Senator Devlin, yes. With reduced level of funding in the co-chair's budget, we would be able to establish the program and start the planning, but we would not have any on-the-ground resources to do the monitoring itself. For the program to get results, because of toxics being so complicated, we need a program infrastructure and we need some good planning and, as I said, working with all the different parties that are interested in this issue first before we'd even start to do the monitoring.
So you would, in effect, be putting in the base to be able to do this in the future, and the ability to monitor in the future would be based on future appropriations from the...
Senator Devlin, that's correct, if we did not get the full funding.
Mr. Chair, may I add to your question? Thank you. Senate Bill 707, the mixing zone bill, is finding its way to a subcommittee near you at some point. I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about the relationship of that bill to this effort, policy-wise and funding-wise. If you're ready to talk about that, I don't know. If you'd rather defer that till later, that's fine by me.
Senator Devlin, Senator Vakian, I can say that they're definitely related in topic. They're all about toxics. And Senate Bill 737 does not assume any monitoring in it itself. I think that they're complementary in the sense that this establishing toxics monitoring is going to give us much better data on where we really are having the problems and where we should really focus our resources. Whereas Senate Bill 737 says let's start looking at pollution prevention efforts that we can take now before we have a lot of data about, you know, what's the most important thing to be working on. So there has been, and I don't know if Stephanie...
I can add a bit, if there's time. There have been discussions, particularly with municipalities. The municipalities have expressed a willingness to assess a surcharge on themselves, a one-time surcharge is my understanding, that would help fund the department do a statewide assessment of what they are referred to as persistent bioaccumulative toxics. So one difference is that that bill contemplates being statewide right out of the chute, whereas our monitoring strategy was to incrementally move through the state, starting with the Willamette. One of the things that's being discussed, there's obviously two important things. One is the adequacy of the funding to do the work envisioned by the bill is being discussed. The second is trying to come to some agreement on what the list of these persistent bioaccumulative toxics would be. That, as Lori alluded to, there are many, many, many options. And so we're in conversations right now to figure out what that would look like. There is some conversation if this bill, it has been referred to Ways and Means. If it comes to this subcommittee, I absolutely think that people are going to want to talk to this committee about the potential relationship between that bill and this policy package and whether or not they can be complementary in terms of funding.
I do not want to create any concerns for people, but should the bill come to the committee, I think that we will ask for a fairly thorough examination of the potential fiscal impact. Yes.
Kind of along those lines, are you talking about the list of chemicals is thousands. Looks like the potential roll-up costs in this in any kind of program is really open-ended, that we don't really know what the 2009 or 2011 or 2000, I mean, we might be talking about millions of more dollars. Is there what is kind of plans are you guys looking at?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, we are, as we speak today, Lori's staff is struggling with doing a fiscal for this bill. I think that there is a hope on the part of some of the proponents of the bill to not require a large general fund investment this session, this budget cycle, to get things going. I think the surcharge was envisioned to kick in 08 and fund work that would be in 09, but your point is very well taken. Obviously, we have to look on then into subsequent biennia and what the potential impacts would be. It's really Section 4B of the bill has been the most difficult one to address because there is language in there that our department has been interpreting as would require the setting of water quality standards, in essence, for these toxics and involvement by the Environmental Quality Commission, which would include rulemaking and all the preparation that goes along with rulemaking in terms of advisory committees. And I certainly don't have to tell all of you there's a tremendous amount of interest by a variety of parties in this subject. So we are doing our best to be responsive to the proponents of the bill and doing a realistic fiscal, but also to do a realistic fiscal. So I think that is, in fact, of course, why the bill has been referred to Ways and Means for that conversation.
One more, Mr. Chair. I'll make sure I'm thinking about these two programs that are different but related correctly. I think fully funding this program is important independent of 737. But it seems to me that if 737 were to be implemented, or anything like 737, that it just enhances the need for full funding in this program.
Senator Lockheed, we would certainly agree with that. That you put your finger right on it, quite frankly. And I would point out, I think that sort of the landmark piece of 737, why people are excited about it, is that the municipal folks have stepped up to the table and really acknowledged this issue and are willing to assess a fee on themselves, which is something that's not occurred before.
Can I clarify one thing in terms of monitoring in terms of the potential toxics that you would monitor for? Well, we commonly have this discussion that I can't remember exactly the numbers. The numbers even date back to the 1970s. They were using the same numbers back then as they're using now, is that as many as 3,000 new chemical compounds are introduced into the environment each year. However, just like in air quality, you've identified probably what you consider the most serious issues facing the public in terms of air quality. I think that with study, you would determine the same things in terms of water quality. We would not be examining for 3,000, even though there are tens of thousands of different chemical compounds out there, different types. You would probably be selecting key ones that you thought were a threat to the public's health. Would that be a...
Senator Devlin, that's exactly correct. That was exactly our thinking process in this program.
And Senator Devlin, I just might point out therein lies one of the reasons why the fiscal is challenging, because one of the first tasks will be to see if everyone can agree what ought to be on Oregon's list.
That will be your... That will be your difficult task. Where do we go now?
I would say, Mr. Chair, unless you have further questions for Lori, we're ready to move on to the land quality programs.
Okay, we'll move on to land quality.
Thank you very much.
While you're moving, I'm going to need to do some work between now and tomorrow's meeting. Tomorrow we have two work sessions that both on the Measure 37 bills. I know that the House is going to be called into session at 8:30. I'll talk to the co-chairs and make sure that the House members that are here are cleared from being on the floor until we get through those two work sessions. I imagine the reason you're meeting at 8:30 is that you're just trying to get as many bills through the process as you can. So
other than or Saturday. So Friday and Saturday, we're way behind.
Some of us are already working on Saturdays, but but anyway, plan tomorrow that to get excused in the morning, and I do not imagine that it will take us more than. Although I'm sure that there will be statements pro and con from some members of the committee, I do not imagine it will take us longer than 30 minutes to get through both bills, and then we'll go on to the normal DEQ presentation. I don't really believe at this juncture that I can actually rearrange the schedule enough to delay the rest of the DEQ presentation, because that would get us into the ODFW presentation, and it might be a little bit difficult, but sort of stand by. But plan on being here tomorrow morning at 8:30, and we'll get somebody to talk to the speaker. With that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Alan Kippett can introduce himself.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alan Kippett. I'm the Land Quality Administrator at DEQ, and what I would like to do is try and quickly move through some of the initial charts in the land quality section and get into our policy packages. First, I think what I'd like to mention is that it's easy to look at land quality and think that, well, we clean up dirt because we're talking about land, but I'd like to point out that a real impetus for our programs is to make sure if we're on the prevention side that we're avoiding contaminants getting into groundwater and surface water, and if we're cleaning up sites, the highest priority are those that have impacted groundwater. That was really the impetus for the underground storage tank program being put in place 20 years ago because a number of gas stations were having leaks that were impacting groundwater. So just want to make that clarification. Through our solid waste, hazardous waste, and underground storage tank programs, we provide assistance to individuals and businesses on ways to reduce toxics and minimize the potential for toxics to get into the environment. Through our emergency response and cleanup programs, we make sure that if there has been a release to the environment, human health and the environment are protected. With federal funds remaining stagnant at best and no fee increases in land quality programs for several years, we've reached a point where some of our programs cannot deliver an adequate level of service, and I'll talk about that when I get to the policy packages. So turning to the first page in tab E of your binder, this chart shows the land quality budget from 1999-01 through 07-09 by fund type. Just want to make a couple of key points in relation to this chart. First, you can see that land quality's federal funds have remained fairly flat over time with one spike in 03-05. That was primarily due to special funding we got from McCormick and Baxter. So that's been the big increase in federal funding in that particular biennium. Second, it's obvious that most of our funding in land quality is from other funds. That's 79% of our budget. That includes not just fees, but also cost recovery revenue that we get for charging oversight of cleanup projects being done in both the tanks and cleanup program. It also includes bond proceeds, and I would point out that the only real difference in the budget between the co-chairs and the governor's recommended budget is the bond sale for the orphan site program, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes. Finally, you'll notice that land quality budget includes very little general fund, which is in red at the bottom of the chart. The $1.3 million included in the governor's recommended budget is obviously a reduction from the 3.5 we had in 99-01, and the biggest problem there is in relation to funding the hazardous waste program, which Stephanie mentioned earlier. I should also point out there are no lottery funds in DEQ's budget, even though it shows that on the bottom of the chart. That separation line is just the separation line. Now if there are no questions, I'll move on to page 2 unless there are questions on this section. This next chart shows land quality FTE by program component. And I'll make a couple of points here before moving into the policy packages. Environmental cleanup programs are shown at the bottom of the bar. in turquoise. And in 2005, we reduced staff to better match ongoing revenue in that program. That was an administrative streamlining and program improvement decisions we've made. The 07-09 FTE numbers reflect that reduction in staff. We aren't looking for any additional resources to add staff to that program. The next two program areas moving up, the Bar Solid Waste and Umatilla Depot, do not have any current budget issues, so I wasn't planning on spending any time talking about those programs unless there are specific questions. Then the next three programs, hazardous waste, underground storage tanks, and emergency response, are programs where revenues have not kept up with cost increases, and the governor's recommended budget includes policy packages to continue the work that needs to be done in those programs. So unless there are any questions on that chart, I'll move into the budget drivers. And I am moving through this really quickly, so please stop me if you have questions. Key program budget driver number one has four of our packages. It's titled Maintain Pollution Prevention Programs. This, what we're really trying to do in a lot of our programs is avoid contamination getting into the environment. So there's a these packages are really aimed at that. And the main problems are that revenue sources have not increased with cost, and really we've had no grant increases since 2000. And there have been general fund cuts in hazardous waste. So the first package, 130, maintaining the underground storage tank program. This package uses the fees to retain 6.65 existing FTE that we would otherwise have to eliminate. And it's necessary for us to maintain our current level of service with those positions. Without this package, DEQ cannot implement a viable underground storage tank program.
Representative
Allen, how many contaminated underground sites do we have presently?
From the underground storage tank program?
Yeah.
I actually have a number on that. Chair Devlin, Representative Girard. Forge, you're quick. In the leaking regulated tank universe, there are 1,247 remaining sites that we know of today. We had identified 6,944. We've completed 5,697 sites in terms of cleaning up contamination from those sites.
Does industry pay for most of those expenses, or do we, the taxpayer, pay for it?
Chair Devlin, Representative Girard, industry, the owners of the facilities typically pay for the cleanups. We oversee that work. I should point out, though, that over the past 10 years or so, we've spent over $5 million in orphan funds cleaning up underground storage tank sites where people have just walked away from the property and there was nobody to clean it up.
Thank you.
Just to continue on with 130 for a moment, Senate Bill 104A, which was passed out of Joint Ways and Means Committee last week, reinstates the fee and raises it from $85 to $135 per tank per year to cover cost increases over the next two biennia. This fee was last changed in 2001. It also continues and expands the scope of our successful field ticket program that we've used here in the underground storage tank program. It's been well received by facility owners. If there are no questions on 130, I'll move on. Package 131 provides some of the resources needed to maintain the federally delegated compliance component of our hazardous waste program. This policy package would add back 1.65 of the existing FTE. The package is funded by an increase in the fee charged to companies that generate hazardous waste. The fee increases in Senate Bill 103, which has passed both the Senate and the House. We've implemented extensive streamlining and efficiency measures in this program, and in fact are cutting staff intentionally at our end to try and keep the program right-sized. However, as Stephanie pointed out earlier, we originally requested additional general fund in this program that was not included in the governor's recommended budget. Without additional funding, we will need to have conversations with stakeholders and EPA about our ability to continue to fulfill federal requirements.
Representative Gillard has a question.
I'm sorry, I asked you the first question and I forgot to ask you the follow-up. In regards to 130, you said approximately 6,000 leaking sites, et cetera. How is that trending? Are there more now than there were 5 years ago, or is there substantially less, et cetera?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Gard, very good question. No, we've been doing very well. There's been a noticeable decline in sites requiring cleanup, and frankly, that's because we've been implementing the compliance side of the program, I think, more aggressively. We've also been working with folks to make sure they have financial assurance coverage so that if there is a leak at a site, they've got the financial capability to keep it up or to clean it up. But I think the main impetus has been we've been hitting the inspection numbers we need to do at these facilities to make sure that the leak detection systems they're supposed to have in place work. So there is a decline in cleanup sites coming in the door every year.
Thank you, Madam Coach.
If there's no questions on 130, I'll move on to number 132. This package provides resources to help protect homeowners from fraudulent work by contractors removing old residential heating oil tanks. This package adds a position to this program so that we can audit contractor records and inspect their work. The new position would be funded by the increase in the certification fees contained in Senate Bill 106, which has also passed the House and the Senate. The last package in this group, Marine Spill Prevention, number 134, supports DEQ's oversight of marine oil spill prevention activities. We've become more efficient in implementing this program and have reduced the number of staff from 4 down to 3. Senate Bill 105 raises the fees necessary to maintain this program with a 3 FTE staffing level, and I believe this bill will soon be going to the floor. Turning the page to tab E, page 4, key program budget driver number 2, maintaining the orphan site cleanup program. This allows DEQ to continue cleanup of orphan sites, which are high-priority contaminated sites where the individuals or businesses responsible for the contamination either can't be identified, won't perform the cleanup, or can't afford to do the cleanup. Package number 133 provides authorization to spend $4.8 million in 07-09 on environmental service contracts, and the associated package number 193 appropriates $638,000 in general fund for debt service. Package number 183 provides limitation for bond issuance costs. As previously mentioned, these packages were included in the governor's recommended budget, and without this funding, we're going to have real difficulty meeting contractual commitments to EPA in relation to 2 Superfund sites, and we'd be looking at suspending some cleanup activity at existing orphan sites, 27 of them that we've been working on, let alone another 19 we have in the queue. We haven't had a bond sale since 2003. This is a really important program, and obviously because it's restricted to high-priority sites, it's very important to public health and the environment as well. I should point out that we do get some revenue back. We try very hard to redevelop some of these properties, and there are some good examples. Astoria plywood site that was converted into a mixed-use residential development. We also try and leverage federal dollars as much as we can with orphan expenditures as well.
Al, I do have a question on these. So for these orphan sites, you've already gone through the process of trying to identify the potentially responsible parties and any legal proceedings to identify those parties or recover any costs, and is that correct?
Chair Dingfelder, that's the first step we take before we even declare it. So, you know, we have a formal process where I have to sign off on actually declaring a site an orphan site, and we can then spend orphan dollars on it. That's the first thing we do, is try and find responsible parties to clean it up. In some cases, it might be a larger area-wide contamination, and we've got an impact on drinking water right away we need to deal with. We'll make a decision that, okay, we're going to do ongoing responsible party searches, but we've got to address the problem right away.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ford.
Just a comment. When I was a county commissioner, I went up into northern Klamath County, a little town called Crescent, that had one of these orphan. And if you haven't ever visited one, it's this one was really bad, and it was quite alarming because every time it rained, the water table would come up, and you'd see the gasoline slick all over the ground throughout the entire community. Absolutely amazing. So
thank
this
you,
is hard work, but it's very necessary.
Any other questions?
If there's no further questions on this package, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, that concludes my comments, unless there are any further questions.
Madam Chair, with your permission, I will just finish up the agency presentation with the last few tabs. I would start with tab F, which is agency management. This includes our Management Services Division and the Office of the Director. This is basically the infrastructure services of human resources, budgeting, IT, policy, management in the Environmental Quality Commission, et cetera. The pie chart shows the portion of our overall budget, which is 12% for agency management. And as you know, we support all the other programs, typically as a central service operation. Our budget shop is there as well as accounting, et cetera. And we are funded in agency management by what is referred to as an indirect or a service charge assessed on the programs for those services. And that amount of money that agency management receives, of course, is determined by the overall approved budget. And agency management over the last three biennia has declined as our other programs have declined. So we are requesting for the first time in a long time a policy package to support agency management. It's policy package 140. This is tab F, page 2. This is our business and workforce accountability package. We requested in the governor's recommended budget 8 positions, an auditor, a grants management position, a workforce transition planning specialist, and I talked to you a little bit about that in my opening remarks, training development specialist, position for continuous process improvement, public records management, and strategic policy and planning. And the co-chairs budget would reduce that request by 3 FTE. And I'm not intending to say a whole lot more about this, but I'd be happy to, if you would like me to, talk a little bit more about it. The indirect rate, sometimes people wonder about that. We do negotiate that with the federal government as part of our grants. The current biennium, it's a 19.58% indirect rate. That is going up to 20.04 in the coming biennium. And if there's no questions on that, I would move on to cross-program.
Any questions? Representative Flynn?
What other funds beyond the federal government's funds would you charge an indirect rate to?
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, Representative Clem, that indirect is charged on our entire budget. But the rate negotiation, we have to negotiate a particular rate with the federal government, and that drives the rate for everything else.
And Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, Representative Clem, just to clarify, this agency is kind of unique because most agencies just charge an indirect on their other funds or federal funds, but a number of years ago, the EPA was concerned that the state was not adding general fund to agency management, so they negotiated an agreement with DEQ where they would charge an indirect rate on all funds. That's one reason why you see it a lot smaller. Then, for example, Department of Ag might be around 30%, but we give them general fund and their admin to help cover the state share of their admin costs, so that's part of the difference. So this agency is really kind of unique, and that anything, really, most of the budget in agency management is double counting of dollars somewhere else in their budget.
Follow-up.
If you assign the indirect percentage to some other program, it's not federal, and it's less than $1
available there. Madam Chair, Representative Clem, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move on to tab G, which is cross-program. And cross-program, as you can see, is a very small part of our budget. It is actually a budget category, if you will. It's a budgeting unit, and it's created to handle some funding that comes into the department that is, in fact, activities that are distributed across all of our programs. And we do have a few policy packages in here that I want to cover with you. They start on tab G, page 2. The first policy package is the Environmental Information Exchange Network. This is a federally funded package to do DEQ's work on a national effort funded by EPA, which allows states to exchange data, also allows us to meet our reporting requirements to EPA more efficiently, and it will ultimately allow others than state agencies more access to environmental data. So it is a modernization of environmental data systems. And I would just like to say that Oregon has been a leader. We were one of the first states to sign on to this. Our IT guy, Mitch West, has now been tapped by EPA to actually go and work for them nationally on this system. So this would continue our efforts, and these are limited duration positions. Package 152 on page 2 of tab G is the Homeland Security Chemical Analysis. This is a position in our laboratory. Originally, after 9/11, funding came through the Centers for Disease Control. This funds our position at our lab that supports first responders if there are unknown chemicals or any viable threats of a terrorist act. Our lab is the lab in the Pacific Northwest where these chemicals come. This position has trained some other folks in our lab to do this work as well. We have a special room, special equipment, and this continues federal funding to support that service. The money now comes through the EPA, but because of the mechanism that it was set up, it has to come through to us as other funds. And I'm hopeful that Paul Siebert understands why that is, because I don't. But that's the way it is. It is federal funding. Package, any questions on that one? Package 153 is a request to use authority, to get expenditure limitation, to use authority we have, which is to charge fees. It's referred to as receipts authority, where we can charge a fee for the services that we are expending resources on in the planning, permitting, and compliance of the potential liquefied natural gas facilities. And there are three locations that are right now in process, seriously proceeding toward the Federal Energy FERC. Thank you. Regulatory Commission process. The Oregon Department of Energy is the lead agency for LNG licensing, but we play a role in, you heard Lori talking about 401 certification. We play a role in that, and potentially if there are any water quality permits or air quality permits required, we would play a role there. So our staff are currently participating in initial conversations with the three folks that are potentially going to go through this process. There have been a lot of community meetings. There's just a lot of work being done, and we would have authority here to hire a couple of people to take over that work, because we're having to not do other work for the work that our folks are now doing, one in our northwest region and one down in the Coos Bay area, where the other, there are two potential sites on the lower Columbia and one down in Coos Bay that are being discussed.
Jeff?
And
yes. Question. Stephanie, so the funding for this, the receipts authority, does that fully cover your costs to permit these facilities or for oversight of the permitting?
We would hope so, Madam Chair. We and Senator Devlin, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And, of course, receipts authority, we don't have to bill if there's no work, and then, of course, we will bill if there is work. We do not expect there to be more than one facility, ultimately, in the state of Oregon. I don't think there's potentially supposed to be one in the whole West Coast. And so Oregon is still very much in the mix of political and other debate about whether or not there's going to even be a facility. But we would certainly expect that with two positions, if there does end up being a facility in Oregon, we could handle the work.
Let's see.
I just finished policy package 153, page 2, tab G, and I will move on unless there are other questions. Okay. Tab G, page 3, policy package 171, 172, and 173. As many of you know, through the action of this body, which we much appreciate, we are about ready to move into a new laboratory facility in Hillsboro that we will be co-located with Health and Human Services Lab. We have been co-located with them for many years in an old parking garage at Portland State University, and this August we will be ready to move into the new lab, and there is a rent increase associated with that, and the general fund has been included in both the governor's and the co-chair's budgets for that increase, and we very much appreciate it. And sort of like the question that Representative Klim asked earlier, if that had not been included, then the programs, there would have been work that the programs would not have been able to do in order to pay for the increased rent. So we do appreciate that being included in the budget.
One question. In the case of the new labs, and I've been in the old labs, my understanding is that, of course, you included in the cost of doing that, you also actually brought a lot of equipment up to standards in terms of what you would need. Are you reasonably satisfied that you have what you need now in terms of equipment?
Senator Devlin, I believe we are. We've actually, our lab folks have done very good budget management over the years, and so we haven't had to have a complete fell swoop of new equipment just because we're moving. So we have built equipment over time, and we are certainly hopeful that that we will be able to use what we have now with the capital outlay that is in our budget.
Then a question in terms of, are there any additional questions in this area?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Stephanie, just so I want to make sure I understand these three packages for the lab. Do these represent the share of the other fund and federal fund program costs that would have normally paid for the rent, but you don't have the federal funds or the fees? So in essence, it's backfilling with general fund the responsibility of or the costs for the lab, increased costs for the lab for other funds and federal funds.
That's absolutely correct, as Mr. Siebert points out. And that also reminds me to tell you why the numbers are different, which is that they reflect the actual usage of the lab by each of our programs. So you'll see that we have very heavy usage by our water quality programs, so they have the largest share.
I might back up for just one moment because I was actually surprised how quickly you went through so many things while I was gone for about 9 minutes. I really didn't intend to be gone for nine minutes, but it's dangerous to walk in these halls. On 140, the package under, did you comment specifically about the co-chair's reduction in that package and what you would choose or not choose to do?
I alluded to it, Mr. Chair, but I didn't go into detail. The page itself, if you'll look at tab F, page 2, you'll see that some of the positions have asterisks, and the training development specialist, one of the continuous process improvement positions, and the strategic policy and planning position. Those are three positions that were not included in the co-chair's budget. The positions, the internal auditor, as you may recall, there was a legislative requirement to do that, and so that was our number one priority for a position, because we don't have one, and that is in both the governor's rec and the co-chairs. Also, grants management position, the second priority position, we contracted during this last biennium for a review of our internal administrative processes. And this was a recommendation that came out of that internal review, that we needed to have a person just focused on grants management, and that's why that is a priority position. The transition planning position, that is included in both the co-chairs and the governor's rec. I mentioned earlier what's happening with workforce, the whole change in the workforce and Gen X and Gen Y. This would be a position in our human resources office devoted especially to that. The training development specialist, which is not included, of course, then begs the question of, once you bring these folks into the agency, which I mentioned earlier is a very technical agency, do we have adequate training for those folks? We don't think we do, and we had requested that position, but it is not included in the co-chair's budget. Another position not included that you'll see with the second one that has an asterisk is the continuous process improvement position. We have been, I'll just mention now what I was going to talk about later when I talk about efficiencies. There is a movement across the country called Lean, and in which many public sector agencies are adopting processes called, that you may have heard of, Kaizen or Six Sigma, value stream mapping. There are several states that are already doing this. Oregon wants to join in. Washington and Idaho have started looking at these processes. Basically, they've been focused on permitting, but they can be on such processes like how you do your lab samples. They have seen dramatic results in reducing process time. You have to invest, and you have to bring in folks who have some experience doing this, and you basically invest for a week or so in mapping out processes and kind of looking at how you can reduce the time you are spending. And I don't want to take too much of your time talking about it. We have had a fellow from Delaware come out who has implemented it and led other states. Iowa has done some. Minnesota has done some. It's absolutely phenomenal what you can do to improve processes. And so that would be the focus of process improvements. There's other things we can do as well, but we're very, very interested in getting that going. Some states have had that mandated by their legislature. One of the things that I think makes us unique is that we are looking at it voluntarily. We had looked at two positions in continuous process improvement, and the co-chairs have included one of those. Public records management is a position that is in both the co-chairs and the governor's rec. That, again, was a recommendation that came out of the internal administrative study that we had done, that we needed to do a better job of making our records accessible, and also do more things like document scanning, that sort of thing. So we did include a public records management position. And then the final position, which was not in the co-chairs but is in the governor's rec, is amazing for an agency of our size. We basically don't have a centralized strategic planning unit of any kind or really responsibility. So it's mostly run out of my office. My assistant to my commission does some. Greg Aldrich, my legislative person, does some. Patty Seastrom, who works in budget, does some. So we decided we needed to have a person who is the focus of our strategic policy and planning efforts and sort of pull them all together. Our negotiations with EPA, the strategic planning brochure you saw, it's in the pocket of the binder, that sort of thing. That's what that position was about, and that is not included in the co-chair's budget.
What I think we will do now is we'll close for today. Tomorrow we will have the two work sessions first up in the morning, so we'll need a quorum in the morning. Those two work sessions might be of interest to you, but they have nothing to do with your budget. and then we will go on to the 10% cut costs and also efficiencies. And I would believe that would finish up your presentation.
That's correct.
We'll have public testimony then on Wednesday.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And so we should be able to remain on the schedule. And tomorrow I just ask that all members from the House be here in the morning.
At 8:30 or at 9?
At 8:30. At 8:30.
Okay.
We don't have a time specific on the schedule, do we?
It does not.
It's 9 o'clock for the work.
10% and stuff.
Okay. We'll do the 10% and the efficiencies first, and then we'll go to the work session. But I do have a little bit of an issue here, and that is they're going to be on the floor in the morning, and they need to come. The House members need to be here for those work sessions, but they might be pulled back at any time.
Well, do you want us here for a time certain at 9, since that's what it was posted as? Or
No. Well, you should...
Try to be here at 8:30.
Okay. I'd be here at 8:30.
Okay.
It'll probably... If your sessions are any like ours, the first 15 or 20 minutes, all those things are very nice. But I don't think you'll...
We're very efficient, Mr. Chair. We don't waste any time on the House floor.
We just have to pick up...
But be here at 8:30, and then we will start in right with the 10% and the efficiency.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And depending on what my presentation is, yes, going to be 10 minutes maximum. It'll just depend on how many questions you have.
Okay. And if you could get with Paul to see also if you could get some idea about what we might expect in terms of testimony on Wednesday, it would be helpful.
Right now we have 12 folks that we know of, but we will talk
okay.
to
Paul. With that, I'll close both public hearings and adjourn.
Fairly